Welcome to the Blather, number 5, on Ratbag Radio. Dave Riley speaking. We have Linda Seaborn here today, who is an activist in the, what we call it, single...
Council of Single Mothers and Their Children.
Okay, which is to do with single mothers and particularly those that are receiving a pension.
Yes, particularly those, yep.
And as listeners may know, the federal government has made a major changes to the support benefit system in this country. I wonder if you can explain those changes, what sort of changes have been brought up by the federal government over the last so few months.
Yep, well, it's the sole parents' pension that's been changed. And what people might not know is that it's also parents, the partnered parents, whose partner receives Newstart allowance. So it applies to not just single parents, but partnered parents on welfare as well. And what happens is, once the youngest child is 6 years old, the parent is forced to meet a workforce participation obligation for 15 hours a week. So that's work. They want them to work 15 hours a week, study or do voluntary work. And that throws up a lot of concerns about who's going to be looking after the children during this time and where are the jobs that are 15 hours a week going to come from. And they can be penalised if they don't do it. They can lose part of their benefit.
What does this mean socially? Because one of the so-called reforms of the Whitlam Labor government, straight after they got elected, was to introduce pensions for single mothers. This was a major social input in Australia, which made the ability for women to bring up their children themselves a viability. How radical is this change in a reactionary way compared to what existed over the last 30-odd years?
It's huge, because back then what Whitlam did was it recognised parenting as work and it made it so that children basically had the right to have their parents available to them to raise them. Now, for Howard, you hear him talk about family values and the importance of having a parent at home, but that's only for people who are well off enough not to need any welfare benefits. For everybody else, everybody on welfare benefits, their kids don't need them. Those parents have to go to work.
So what does this mean for women and women's choices in terms of if they find themselves pregnant and decide to have a child relative to the values, the very values that Howard espouses?
All right, well, the first thing that comes to mind is if they're pregnant and going to have a child, they need to separate from their partner before July the 3rd next year so that they come in under the old legislation rather than the new legislation. Because if you're a sole parent under the old legislation, you maintain the sole parent's pension until your youngest child's 16 and you're not forced to go out to work. Other than that, for people that are going to have parents and become separated after July the 3rd next year, they're going to have a much harder time of it. Once the youngest child's 6, they're going to be pressured to go to work. They're going to be raising their children in an era where sole parenthood is stigmatised, where the whole work of raising children, there's going to be those contradictory values. If you're well off, you're supposed to stay home. If you're poor, you've got to go to work. And then you combine that with the industrial relations reform. This is where it really kicks in, because you're forcing people to go out to look for work at the same time as working conditions are being eroded and people can be sacked for no reason whatsoever. It's going to be the people who can't come into work because their kids are sick that are going to get sacked, who are then going to have Centrelink on their case again because they're supposed to have a job. And they're going to be very vulnerable. The way that Howard says people can negotiate their own working conditions, you know, as an equal with their boss, people who are at risk of losing their welfare benefit if they don't look for work are very vulnerable in those negotiating positions. They're just going to have to take whatever they can get.
So a segment of the female population are going to be pauperised more under these conditions and are going to be forced into a struggling mode, more so than they are now. They're going to have to take on jobs that, because the law requires them to take on jobs even at lower wages.
Yep. And they're required to do 15 hours a week. So, for example, there are women in the Council of Single Mothers and Their Children in exactly this situation. They've been studying at uni to improve their education and improve their prospects. They've got work as research assistants, which pays quite well, and they're working, you know, 1 or 2 days a week part-time to supplement their income while they study, but they're not working 15 hours a week. Those women will be expected to throw in their well-paid jobs with good career prospects in return for anything that pays 15 hours a week. A checkout chick at Target will do.
So, but previously under the regulations, up until the changes, I forget how long they've been, over the last few years, it was 30 hours a week, wasn't it?
That was for the disability pension.
So what are they doing now? And they're trying to integrate disability pensions, the sort of criteria or protocols for the disability pensions for single mums. They don't seem to mesh. What's the rationale here in the way the government's thinking?
Well, the only way that the two of them go together is that the government's trying to cut costs on income support to vulnerable people.
And they're treating all welfare categories in the same basket, right?
Yep.
So, regardless of the attributes, whether it's... I mean, it's almost as though they're treating children as a handicap. If, for instance, I'm in a wheelchair or I have a physical disability and cannot work on full time, and then I could only work, you know, 15 or whatever so many hours a week, that same handicap is being transposed to the fact that a woman has a child and is being treated in that sort of category. Is it?
No, I don't see it that way, do I? I think that they're making children invisible. They're acting as if the child doesn't even exist.
After the age of six.
Yeah, and provides no obstacle to employment, and that the woman will just be able to go out there and get a job, and it's not going to impact on parenting or the child at all, as if the work of parenting doesn't even exist. With the disabilities, it's a bit different. Like, they're saying, you know, it's about, they reckon that people are faking disabilities, you know, blah, 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 whatever. And, I mean, you know, the area that I work in is psych disability, and that's
that's psychiatry or psychology?
Psychiatric disability. Yeah. And that's the fastest increasing area of disability in Australia. And that's a group of people that all of the instruments for measuring disability don't work for, because the measuring instruments are set up for physical disabilities, measuring, you know, how mobile you are in relation to how many hours a week you can work, whereas a psychiatric disability doesn't work like that at all. Somebody may well be able to go out to work for 15 hours a week for 4 months, and then it's, you know, it's winter or there's a crisis in their life or something happens that triggers their mental illness, and they can't work 15 hours a week anymore. And also the fact that they've been moved off the security of the disability pension onto this so-called enhanced new start could also be a contributing factor to them having a, you know, a bout of psychiatric illness. So it's going to hit the people with psychiatric disabilities very hard.
Yes, and well, but at the same time, I think part of the agenda here is to drive people off welfare, isn't it? This is the welfare to work program.
Yeah.
And I'm certain that they've actually quantified this and how many they can get off welfare. That's part of the game, isn't it?
I'm sure that they've got a quota of how many they want to get off welfare, and it's about saving money. That's how they're also talking about tax cuts to rich people. They've got to get the money from somewhere, and this is it.
These changes that have been brought in, there's been some radical changes like work for the dole schemes and sundry other thing, and the major talk is of this mutual obligation. Everyone has a mutual obligation to.
And what we say in the Council of Single Mothers and Their Children is that raising those children is our mutual obligation. We're meeting that obligation by that work of raising those children, who are the next generation.
But the ideology of Howard would say that anyway, except as long as you don't do it on welfare, that's what they mean, don't they?
Yeah.
They mean that the only choice for women to do it if they that way is that they must have a separate breadwinner.
Yes.
And they must have a partner that pays us. We're stuck down with the old concept, the standard concept of the nuclear family.
Yep, and that the breadwinner needs to earn enough money for the family not to be receiving any welfare benefits.
Right. This is the other problem associated to this, because for a lot of people, with welfare, a lot of women going back to work too, is that the cost of even childcare makes it extremely difficult to go back to work and actually have a viable income after paying for childcare costs anyway.
That's right. Yeah. And then in a lot of places, the childcare is not even available.
Yeah.
So they say that they're not going to force mothers to go back to work where there's not childcare available, but we don't know yet how they're going to judge that.
Well, they'd probably judge it by the same judicial system. They're going to judge people's wages under the IR laws, which is some sort of hooey guy who's going to sit there in judgment and say, OK, that's OK and that's not, isn't it? It's very confusing how they did it, because they basically you've only got recourse to the courts or some other mechanism that's supposedly already set up to apply for your rights here, it seems to me.
Yeah, well, they haven't said anything yet about how they're going to determine it if a woman says, look, I need to be exempted from the requirement to work because there's no childcare available in my area. They haven't said how they're going to, you know, agree or not agree to that.
Well, let's have a look at some of the other things you've been talking about. They're talking about what sort of welfare, what real welfare to work scheme would be like. Now, we know what Howard's on about, and Howard's on about basically reducing the number of people on welfare and making it an obligation by some spurious justification that they should be working regardless of the conditions of the work and regardless of the work that's offered. What sort of welfare to work scheme is fair and viable?
Well, I guess one of the first things to know is that of all single parents, in any one year, 75% of them work or study in some way, and at any point in time, 50% of them are working and studying. So single parents are a group already that are very highly motivated to study and to work. So removing obstacles would be the way to do that, that most single parents do want to have a job. And Howard's just created another obstacle in that they are removing the pensioner education supplement, which was a small amount of money. I think it was about $30 a week to assist with the costs of studying. Under the new system, you won't have that either. So he's really directing single parents away from educating themselves and getting well-paying work. He's really directing them straight into the marginalised, low-paid work where they'll be most vulnerable. So not doing that, supporting education, making education free, getting rid of HEX fees. Education is the key to better employment. So we should have free education, and it should be accessible to women with children. There should be childcare on site in schools. And that it shouldn't be a punitive system at all. There's a very big disincentive to work under the new system. If a single parent who's under the old system works for 12 weeks and earns enough money to go off the sole parent's pension and then needs to go back on the pension when she reapplies, she's going to be on the enhanced New Start rather than the old pension system. So you'll find all single parents, all women that are single parents now, will be working very hard to not go off the pension at any time because they'll lose that security.
Because that's part of the problem, is being on welfare and not being on welfare and then being on welfare again is a bureaucratic nightmare. It makes your life so unstable and unpredictable, and there's no security in, because you don't have no guarantee that you can get back on welfare. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what the new system will be. At the moment, single mothers tend to progressively move off sole parent payments, and that can involve going in and out of the workforce several times. That'll be too risky.
So under the new system, there's no life buoy. There's no lifesaver. You're either in the workforce or you're on welfare.
Yep, and it's the same for repartnering. If for any reason you go off the sole parent's pension for 12 weeks or more, when you go to come back on it, you'll come back under the new regime.
Regardless of the requirements of your children too, which just seem to be, as you say,
invisible, not counted.
You know, as though they're something that's constant, and that they don't have any variable and developing needs and any particular dynamic of the needs that you have to relate to on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis.
Yeah, like most of the pressure is on the idea that you should be completely available to return to work once your children are in high school, and sometimes that can be the most demanding time in a child's life. If your kid's going off the rails, there is no one else. And a lot of single parents, they don't have the support of their ex-partners, extended family, and they might not even be near their own family. For some single parents, it's just them. And if their kid's going off the rails, they've got to be there, because then they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. If they're not there and their kid's going off the rails, they're judged as being a negligent parent. If they are there, it means they're not going to work. You know, so what What we want in the Council of Single Mothers and Their Children is that the children have to come first. In all of this, it has to be determined by what the children need, and you'd think that'd be what Howard would want. I mean, it's so obvious.
Well, they were. Howard's very good at giving little cash payouts to parents for children as a little sweetener if he wants support, but when it comes yeah. to the actual day-to-day activity, there doesn't seem to be that same sort of consideration.
That's right.
So what's the general attitude of single mums for your association? What's likely to be the activities around the country now in terms of trying to deal with this situation and change the legislation around?
Well, you know, it's not just the welfare reform, don't you? You know that the family court's been overhauled and the child support payments have been changed.
Okay, well, let's go to the family court situation, because they happen to be occurring at the very same time as these welfare changes.
And the child support payments.
Yeah, well, let's get to those too.
Yeah, well, the family court changes are... There's a very strong fathers lobby group. It's in the United States, it's in England, it's in Australia. Here, you'll see the most extreme version of it in Australia with the black shirts in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Group of, angry fathers whose marriages have broken down, who blame the women for what happened, who consider the children to basically be their property and have a lot of disregard for anyone other than themselves. They've lobbied very effectively. They've got John Howard's ear, and there's been changes made to family law where the idea is to try to stop cases about who the child lives with after separation going to court and put it through a counselling mediation type of service. Now, at the moment, very few cases actually go to the family court. Most of those that do go to the family court are because they involve family violence and there's danger involved. But there's a very popular myth going around at the moment that women make up allegations of violence in order to get the children. And it's terrible because it means that all these men have their lives destroyed. The research and the evidence around that is that it's very rare for that to actually happen. It's much more common for allegations of violence to be disbelieved and afterwards, after people have been killed and after people have been harmed, it'd be found out to be true. But despite the evidence, they've had a committee inquire into it and decide to set up these family relationship centres all around Australia. And they're setting up the first pilot ones. I think there's about 8 of them that will happen over the next year. And separating couples will be directed into these relationship centres. Lawyers won't be allowed into any mediation that happens there. The whole idea is to stay away from lawyers and get people to sort it out themselves. And that supposedly they're going to pick it up if there's any family violence and divert those people to the family court. But what no one's been able to explain is how are they going to pick it up? Because studies that have been done before where there's forced counselling is that a high proportion of the time the violence isn't picked up, because if someone's being intimidated and they turn up in a counselling session, they're going to act like everything's okay because they're intimidated. So we're very concerned that people are going to be forced into mediation and forced into counselling with people who are actually harming them. We also have concerns about the safety of the staff working in these family relationship centres. At the moment, any family court counselling actually happens in the family court where they do have security guards. So that's our concerns there, and that there's also talk about granting the residency of the children to the least hostile of the parents. So what will happen is if a mother's making allegations that there's abuse going on and she can't actually prove them, and the father is being abusive and is acting all cool in the situation and making out like she's mad, he may well get residency of the children because she appears to be more hostile than him. And that kind of stuff has been happening in the United States, so we're pretty concerned about that.
How would you nonetheless assess the history of the family court? It was a major introduction in terms of, well, separation in the 70s.
Yeah.
And it has been a reasonably successful history in terms of mediation and decision-making, you think?
Look,
and, that's worth supporting the current status quo in terms of the new changes?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, family breakdown is no fun for anybody. A lot of people manage to do it really amiably. A lot of people manage to put the children first and, you know, work something out that works for them. A small minority actually make it to the family court, and that's usually because there's something pretty serious that's wrong. And we need the family court there to do that.
One thing that struck me when you were talking about this new system of mediation is that I don't think Howard will be using government resources to do that. He'll probably contract it out to various...
He is contracting out to people like Relationships Australia.
Yes.
And, I mean, what he's doing is... I mean, that kind of stuff should be there. People should be able to have access to relationship counselling and things like that. He's putting back something that was taken away before, but he's putting it back with this... It's very judgmental and it's very harsh, and it's coming with this whole theory about women making up false allegations of child abuse, and they're trying to get families to stay together, you know, without respecting it, that some relationships are better off separating. I mean, part of it is they've got this whole thing about how boys need fathers and something absolutely terrible is going to happen to a boy if he doesn't have his father around. I think that, ideally, children need their parents, their grandparents, their uncles and aunties and a healthy community around them. One part of that is, you know, a significant part of that is their mother and is their father. But in some relationships, if there's violence happening, then children can be better off not being with that parent, and that doesn't get recognised at all. I'm tempted
for the sake of maintaining the institution, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
A family is better because it's a family, right? You know, because we say so.
Yeah, as simple as that.
And it's got all these components and we want to keep to this. The third component you were talking about, I forgot which one.
Changes to the child support payment formula.
Okay, well, what's the story on that?
Well, if you're a high-earning, separated father, for example, like a politician, you'll pay less money in child support.
All right.
It's the new formula.
So it's making it easier for guys to welch on their commitments, basically.
Especially high-earning men.
In terms of the criteria judged by the court?
Yeah, well, the Child Support Agency has a formula that they work out child support payments by, and they'll be shifting more of the obligation to the residential parent, which is usually the mother. They'll be taking her income into account in a way that they didn't used to, because there was more leeway because the child was living in that house. There was more of the income that was exempt from being contributing to that formula, but they've changed that. So basically it's going to mean that the household that the child lives in is going to have less money coming into it, and the household of the other parent will have more.
But isn't it true that standardly women who go through marriage breakdown and are left looking after the children decline in their income and decline in their social resources? This is a standard thing right across the board.
Yeah.
In fact, it's the quickest way to become pauperised.
Yeah.
Separate from your husband and lose because you don't get support from your husband and you know all the other attributes are lost to you.
Both parties immediately after a separation have a reduction in income. The household that the children live in stays down, and the household that the children don't live in bounces back up again pretty quickly.
So, just going back to some of the stuff you were talking about before, what is a better system in relative to these questions of mediation? Okay, the present situation with the court's probably worthwhile persevering with.
Yep.
Is there any other criteria that you would like to see invested into this establishment?
If the idea really is to keep the family unit together, I mean, most women, when they have children, are in a relationship and they don't have the children, you know, with the intention of the relationship breaking down. They usually have the children with the intention of the relationship continuing. So, yeah, the relationship centres are a good idea if they're focused on teaching people better skills to be in relationships. And domestic violence is a really big problem. I mean, the reason that women usually, and it's women that are leaving the relationships more frequently than men, women usually leave relationships because they're doing more than their share of the housework and they're sick of it. They're being bossed around or bullied in the relationship and they're sick of it. Or they're being bashed and they need to get out for themselves and their child's safety. Howard pulled the plug on a domestic violence education advertising campaign a couple of years ago, which was not only talking about, you know, when someone's like physically laying into you, that that's domestic violence. It was also talking about what is a healthy relationship as compared to an unhealthy relationship and the early signs that there's an abusive tendency developing within the relationship. Now, Howard didn't like it because he thought that things that were too soft were being called abusive. So he pulled the plug on that campaign. That's exactly the kind of thing that we need. We need to take it back a lot further before people are being abused to the softer, more, you know, the softer kind of abuse that leads on to the stuff that causes relationships to break down.
Just going back to what you were talking about originally, in a way, of how this run of reforms, if we want to call it that, tie in with the other reforms that are coming on the agenda. It seems to me that the industrial relation changes that they're bringing are going to make it more difficult for families, are going to be more difficult for everyone involved in the workforce, and there's going to be ramifications right throughout families. I mean, part of a debate around these work choices is that Howard's saying it's going to be better for families because there's going to be more choices.
Yeah.
Women, for instance, will be able to choose when they want to work.
Well, a lot of families, two-parent families, combine their income earning by working around each other's hours so that one parent's always home, and one parent will work shift work because of the higher penalty rates. They work less hours, they bring money into their family. I mean, they're talking about getting rid of penalty rates. That's not one of the key things that they're going to keep under the new industrial relations. That'll be really bad for families.
And what it also tells me is that men in a work situation will be exploited more, and there always, in my understanding, a relationship between the pressures on men and the level of domestic violence.
Yep.
Not that that excuses us, but I'm just saying there's a vicious circle there.
There's a link,
Because we could talk about domestic violence being tied to poverty and unstable economic situations that imposed on families.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things. There's that kind of idea that the person needs to have accepted in the first place that their frustration can get taken out on somebody who's more vulnerable to them. But then, the stress of, the low wages, the long hours, the being treated badly at work, that all comes into it as well.
I mean, it seems to be what Howard has actually done is ratcheted up a very vicious circle.
Yep.
So that even getting to welfare is not going to be there anymore. You're going to be forced to stay where you are. And the actual pressures on families, the families that he loves to extol as the greatest example of the Australian ethos, are going to be more under pressure and more downtrodden than they are at the present time.
And worse off.
And
absolutely.
People will be forced to stay in the family situation because the option, like separation, is going to be much more difficult to do. I mean,
That's an example of the way that we're going backwards. I mean, in the early 70s, the sole parents pension assisted people to be able to leave relationships that were violent. And that is being eroded. We are going backwards.
And also,
the
divorce laws were changed at the same time. It was so very difficult to get a divorce in Australia before 1972.
Yeah, well, there's calls for that too, to get rid of the no-fault divorce.
That's true. Men's group
are calling for that.
I understand that has been discussed at the level relative to the family court, right? Well, is divorce court and family court, are they the same sort of package?
I don't know.
Anyway.
No,
but I know that no-fault divorce is
the same group that are talking about that,
And it's all part of the same sort of agenda.
Yeah, well, it's like going back to the... As a woman, it's like going back to the 1950s. You can just see it right there on the horizon. It looks surprisingly close. That the idea is that we're supposed to marry and trade whatever we have to give with a man who's got a high income earning potential. That's the lifestyle we're supposed to aspire to. And then we stay home and raise the children.
Remarkably interesting how much cheaper it is for governments too, because they cut back on welfare spending.
But it's so illogical, isn't it? Because not everybody can be a high income earning household. So there's going to be a whole group of people that are going to be applying for government support for their families, and they'll just be getting kicked. And there won't be any way out of it. They'll just be stuck there.
Yep, yeah.
So there'll be more children growing up in more poverty and more stress.
That's just true. And we are faced with a situation where we're talking about surplus budgets too. This is why are we having cutbacks when the budgets are in surplus?
Because they want to give more tax cuts to the rich. That's what they're flagging. It came out in the news on the same night, about 3 months ago. There was an announcement about, you know, impending tax cuts for the rich, and they were getting ready to table the welfare reform that was going to cut people with disabilities and sole parents off the benefits.
This is the irony, isn't it?
Yeah. They're very directly linked.
Really, it's not an irony. It's quite logical, but yes.
Going back to the child support payments, the New Zealand system's quite good. What they do there is that the government pays to the families with the children the money that they're due for sole parent maintenance payments, child support payments, and then it's the government's job to go and collect those payments from the non-residential parents.
Oh, right.
Now, in Australia, unless the child support agency collects the money, you don't get it. They don't just pay you what you're supposed to have. And in some cases, they cut your sole parent's pension as if you're getting the money when you're not actually getting it as well. That's another one of the double whammies that women
don't
can
get.
Don't
they have automatic deductions from the...
There's all different ways you can do it. If you've got a private agreement that you're getting paid that money and then it doesn't turn up...
Like the guy defaults.
Yeah. Then it's up to the mother to prove... I'm just going to say mother and father because that's, you know, in 95% of the situation, that's how it goes. She has to prove that she didn't get the money in order to, you know, get the full Centrelink benefit back again. And then in the cases where the child support agency collects the money, she has to be able to, you know, give them information like, you know, his name and address, where to find him, what his job is, how much money he's earning. And, like, these people have actually separated from one another. They don't actually have a relationship anymore, but unless she can supply all of the information about, you know, where to find him and how to collect the money, they don't do it. But the New Zealand system's much better because then the families get the money. But Australia doesn't want to do that.
You can visit the Blather at ratbagradio.blogspot.com or get in touch with us via ratbagradio@yahoo.com.au. Thank you.